Our next guest is no stranger to Victoria arts lovers, currently head of keyboards at the Victoria Conservatory of Music. He is also, as you heard, Pacific Opera Victoria's curator of engagement and has hosted many pre-performance lobby lectures at the Royal Theatre. Robert Halston taught the life and career of Joni Mitchell for UVic's continuing studies as well, so please welcome Robert Halston.
Thank you very much, everybody. Thank you, Gregor. Thank you. Before we go on at all, since the Nobel Prize has been mentioned, I'd like to actually mention that several years ago, a kind of Nobel equivalent in music called the Polar Prize was given jointly to Joni Mitchell and Pierre Boulez. And that's right up there. It's just not as well known as the Nobel Prize. So, and it is for music.
Now, before I start asking Robert Halston the Joni Mitchell expert questions, I have a question for Robert Halston, the Joni Mitchell fan, if that's okay. I understand you are an active participant. You haven't for a long time in a Joni Mitchell listserv. Can you tell us about that?
Oh, I'd love to. It's the JMDL. I'm a Jimdler. The Joni Mitchell discussion list. I've been a member since 1998. And this is an online group of friends and fans, middle-aged hippies, essentially, who are united by a love of Joni. We get into discussions and arguments about whether Dog Eat Dog is a really good album or not, about whether Blue is really better than Hejira and everything like that. But it's all very fun. And we've actually had these get-togethers, which we call Joni Fests. And so I have met many of these people. We've become good friends. One of the things about it, which I'll tell you if you'd like to have more information, is that we're affiliated with a website, JoniMitchell.com, and the guy who put it together, Wally Breeze, was a really nice fellow. He died of cancer, unfortunately, a number of years ago. And you can find anything you ever want to know about Joni Mitchell on that list, reviews of her albums, interviews, transcriptions of her guitar writing in tablature and piano writing. We all contributed to that to help it grow.
And it's the Joni Mitchell...
The Joni Mitchell discussion list. which is part of JoniMitchell.com.
And that's what makes you a Jimdler.
I'm a Jimdler.
A Jimdler. All right, I got the term correct.
And proud of it.
Now I want to ask you to put your expert hat on and give us, if you will, a brief biography of Joni Mitchell. Who is she? What were her beginnings and her rise to stardom?
Well,
and some important milestones.
That's a long question to answer. She is actually an Albertan by birth, although she's associated with Saskatchewan. And for many of her formative years, she lived in Saskatoon. And so she has a very strong feeling for the Canadian prairie. But for most of her life, her Canadian home has been on the Sunshine Coast here in BC. She calls that her heartbeat. LA is her workplace and BC is her heartbeat. And like many people from that generation, no matter what kind of branch of entertainment they were in, Joni Mitchell felt that she more or less had to move to the United States in order to have a career. Her earliest days were in Toronto, sort of picking up a meager living, playing in coffee houses and things. So she managed to move down into the States, and her career began slowly to take off. I gather she had a number of admirers who helped bring her songs to the public's eye and attention, to the public's ear, I should say. Tom Rush, Buffy St. Marie, Judy Collins, any of these, all of those people recorded her songs before she did and made them popular. And so the first part of her career really was in New York City and Detroit. And she toured in the East. And then she was invited to go out to Los Angeles, and she made a recording with the help and the encouragement and the producing of David Crosby, who was one of her first absolutely evangelical supporters.
All right. And how quickly was her rise to fame at that point?
I would say it looks to me like it was quite quick. Mm-hmm. Her fall from public glory has been long, but her rise to the top was quite quick. She's never been a really, really, really top album seller in the way that, say, Carole King was with Tapestry, but she has a unique spot when it comes to the influence on other popular musicians. And so in terms of her biography after that, she's lived in Los Angeles and essentially been centered there, and the rest of it to me is most intimately connected with her actual music making, her collaborators, and the different paths that she's chosen to go down. You have a great quote from Dave Crosby in the the pamphlet that's out in the lobby. But one of the best quotes to me is from one of the reviewers who said, "No major star has ever risked everything so completely, so thoroughly, and so ruthlessly as Joni Mitchell." It's as if she felt no compulsion whatsoever to protect her celebrity when she wanted to go down new paths.
I was going to ask you what it was. So in risking what? Just by trying new styles, yes. Not worrying about critical response or backlash?
Or popularity.
Or popularity.
She's remarked on that a lot during her time, but nothing ever seemed to stop her from pursuing her maverick quest for change and for innovation.
Does she strike you as a true artist in that sense? Maybe that's a loaded term.
It's not my own criteria for what constitutes true art. She's always been a true artist. She just has been one who wanted to change and wanted to forge new paths. But to me, she's always done it excellently.
When did you first come across her music yourself?
I was in high school, Central High School.
Oh yeah,
just down there. And I got to know the album Ladies of the Canyon, which is her third album, very well, word for word, note for note. And I'd heard some of the other songs. And after that, my own musical pursuits took me along different paths. But along with Joni Mitchell, there were a couple of other people that I think can be put into the same kind of category of greatness. And one was Laura Nyro. I don't know if anybody remembers Laura Nyro. To me, those two were really, really icons. And then in 1978, after I was already teaching at the conservatory and actually making plans to go away to university, a friend of mine introduced me to a live album called Miles of Isles. And I remember the very day we were riding in a car and it went on and I was, oh my God, I've got to hear more of this. That was the summer of 78. And by mid-August, I'd bought all the other albums and gotten to know them all and continue to love them all, actually.
There's so much to a Joni Mitchell song and to her songs. I wonder what it was, though, that first got you or that really got its hooks in you. I mean, was it her voice or the lyrics or a combination? What was it?
It was
really
a combination of the lyrics and the music, I should think, more than anything else. The way they fit together so beautifully, the way she is so skilled with internal rhymes. She's obviously a person who is not content to submit a first draft of a lyric. Mm. Other Canadian songwriters I won't name, one is called Neil Young, all too often feel to me like they're willing to settle for that. Joni Mitchell reminds me more of Stephen Sondheim. They'll work till 10 in the morning through the night to get every last semicolon in place. And then when you hear them sing it, it feels like, oh my goodness, that rhyme must always have existed. So I always admired her as well as loved her for that. And the wonderful harmonies that she produces, I think, are fantastic. Now, in terms of her voice, I think she is the best interpreter of her songs. And she's the template to which we go. But there have been some fantastic covers, and I'm so excited to see this show because of that. And because she's often referred to her songs as plays.
Interesting. I like the way you put that, that she does the best interpretations of her songs.
Well, I think she does. She certainly is the most liberating.
What do you think about her revisiting her older songs as she gets older and the different take that she puts on them?
Well, I heard her sing that concert in Boston, so I was there live.
Oh, you were there?
I was there live to hear it. And I'm just going to have a little anecdote that I hope will amuse you. The Joni Mitchell discussion list had by this time become fairly well known, and some of its members had introduced them to Joni's second husband, introduced themselves to Larry Klein. And perhaps had been a little bit too insistent on getting to know him a bit better because his association with the great goddess. And so I met Larry Klein in the bar after this show, and my friend and I said, well, we really liked the show, and we shook his hand, and that was all we said. But someone else went up and said, oh, we're all members of the Joni Mitchell discussion list. I've never seen a man get out of a bar that quickly before. So sometimes fandom can weigh heavily on the shoulders of its object, you know.
I'm sure.
So I forgot your question.
Oh, the way her own songs and her own interpretations or takes on the same songs changed as she aged.
Yes. Well, some of them I think work better than others, I have to admit. And it's difficult to hear a song like Refuge from the Rose, which is from Hejira, without longing for that bass line that was created by one particular person. Joni's relationships with her collaborators like Jaco Pastorius and Wayne Shorter are really, really close. But I enjoyed them. But who among us hasn't seen that scene from Love Actually, where Emma Thompson is alone in her room listening to Joni's 2000 version of Both Sides Now after that revelation? It has that kind of power. And it's like she wrote the song too early. Every word of it is true. But she had to grow into it a little bit herself. So if you haven't heard the 2000 version of Both Sides Now, I recommend it.
It is a great contrast.
It is gorgeous. It's glorious.
Joni Mitchell is certainly one of Canada's cultural icons. Do you think she could be said to have a uniquely Canadian voice? Feel no obligation to say yes. I sometimes feel in this country we have to put a CanCon sticker on things. Is she uniquely Canadian,
no,
or is she just a great
No, she writer? Isn't. She's just a great writer. Her influence has been so varied. Her influences from her youth, from her childhood and her youth, include Rachmaninoff, Chopin, Debussy, Edith Piaf, Duke Ellington, and then ultimately Miles Davis. That's a very receptive kind of audience, and also of course her influences in painting, which we don't even get into in this context. There is a feeling to me more of being Canadian. There's a feeling for the bleak openness of the prairies in winter, and I think she's found equivalents for that in her travels in the U.S. And her influence that she has cited most, even more than Dylan, was her English teacher in grade 8, Mr. Kranzmann, who said, "You have to write in your own blood." So she's found it inside. So insofar as her being a self-professed Canadian icon, I think that probably rankles a little bit with her, because she's gone so much more internationally than that. But she does write in her own blood, and her blood is Canadian, and she was brought up in the prairie. So,
you mean you hear something like the river, for instance, and you can't help but think that evokes images of the prairies right away.
It does. I mean, yes. Although it begins, it doesn't snow in where she is. So there's an LA sensibility there too. She likes it there.
It's a nice contrast.
Yeah, it's a great contrast.
If you could ask Joni Mitchell one question yourself, what would it be?
Well, these days it would be, "How are you doing?" Because she's had some major, major health issues. But, you know, I'm going to answer that very, very honestly and very truthfully. I don't want to meet Joni Mitchell, I don't think. I'm happy with what I have in her art. And I remember a composer of an opera we did, Lee Hoiby. We did his version of The Tempest. He was also a great Joni Mitchell fan. And he was offered the opportunity to meet her, and he turned it down. He said, "I would rather just have the work." And on the JMDL and JoniMitchell.com, we can read a lot of the interviews, and we get to know her a little bit by those. But I've heard from anybody I know that's met Joni Mitchell, she's extraordinarily gracious and very vivacious, very funny. So I think I'll just leave it at that. Now, I'm not going to get a chance to meet her anyway, so of course I can say that. If you said, "Well, actually, Joni's backstage," I'd be there faster than anybody else. You know? But of course, all I'd ask her is, how are things going? Because she's, I don't know if everybody knows this, last year she suffered a brain aneurysm, and she's a loner, she's a recluse almost now. So she wasn't found for quite some time. She was unconscious on her floor, so she's recovering from that. And she's been seen out in the company of Herbie Hancock and Chick Corea. So she's out and at it again.
Robert, it's great to talk to you. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very, very much indeed. Thanks, everybody.
Robert Holliston is head of keyboards at the Victoria Conservatory of Music and Pacific Opera Victoria's curator of engagement.